Session number 9433, Reel 1.
Mr. A.J. Smith, Reel 1. Could you tell me your date and place of birth, Mr. Smith?
The 1st of February, 1900, and it was at Feltham, Middlesex.
Could you tell me a little about your family and the background?
My family? My father was self-employed. He had a nursery and florist business in Acton, Middlesex, and my mother... She was younger than him a bit, and she worked in the business as well.
You didn't stay at Feltham for long, then?
No, we left. I should think they. They went from Feltham to Kensington, where he was in partnership in a florist business for a matter of 2 years, but he didn't agree with the partner, and so he started off on his own.
And that
took
was
over, Acton. Took Acton, known as Princess Louise Nursery, because she once opened something in Acton, and it was right across the entrance.
Did you have any brothers and sisters?
I had a brother who was older than me, and a sister who was older than me, so I was the young one.
Was it a comfortable upbringing and background?
Yes, it was a busy upbringing, because in a nursery... There are about 100 jobs youngsters can do fairly willingly, because a lot of it involves watering plants and using hoses and being paid so much, a few pence for jobs done, and also in the summer painting the greenhouses, which meant lying on a ladder hung across right across a big greenhouse and coming down step by step with a paintbrush and your putty. And very enjoyable, that part. Another part was feeding the plants, going along lines of plants that were in pots, giving them a label full of, just with a dab of clay's fertilizer. And at the same time, I'm sorry to say, we would have a sieve with a piece of string on it to try and catch birds. Watch out, and then pull the string and the bird would be underneath. I don't remember ever catching one, but anyhow, we tried, for better or for worse in those days. Yeah.
What about your education?
Education? I went to a new school called the Central School at Acton at 5 years of age, and stayed there until I was 12, when I won a scholarship to the Acton County School, which I think was the first county school or secondary county school in Middlesex.
That'd be in 1912?
That'd be in 1912.
What sort of education did you receive there?
General education till the last year, and then till the fourth year rather. Then I, for better or for worse, joined a group of four or five of us, made up a group of four or five to try out a sort of commercial touch to the education. We had this small group and one master looking after us, and we spent most of the time, I'm afraid, discussing economics. He was crazy about economics, and I'm glad he did in a way, because forever after, things are pretty clear once you've had somebody who's crazy on economics. Everything else falls into line rather well.
So this was a good, solid education you had?
Well, yes, in those days it was. They only had scholarship boys. It was a big area. They came from... Wilsdon, Neasden, Ealing, Chiswick, all the way round, just a few from each place, about three or four from each place. In those days, that's all there were, a very tiny number of scholarships.
How did the other pupils get
there? The other pupils paid the sum of, when I started, at £2.12 and 6 a term, which barred most people, because money was terribly tight everywhere. When I left, it was 4 guineas a term, and a number of those were the sort of people that went were bank managers' sons, civil servants, children, sons, and people in business in town, like tailors. We had several sons of tailors who were up in town. They were nearly all of them, in those days, the middle class, developing middle class people.
How did you fit in as a scholarship boy? Was there any prejudice?
There was no prejudice, particularly as the scholarship boys supplied the major part of the musical society, which was very important in the school. And by the way, I was soloist for most of that time in the school, so I did quite nicely. Had to appear at concerts and things, which was a bit of a nightmare, but one of the master's wives trained my singing for songs at the concerts or anything like that. And the master who actually did the music side had been educated at Heidelberg University, and he was magnificently fond of music. And the sort of stuff he loved was Tannhauser, of course. There you are, Heidelberg. Tannhauser, we sang that sort of stuff quite a lot.
Mm. That was your major hobby at the time, was it?
At the time, that was my... I was also in a church choir. So that was the main hobby. Yes, that was my hobby. Cricket, I just play, which I had to play some. I was always long stop. That was the quietest job there was, I'm afraid. Yes.
Did you have any involvement with the Scouts or the Church Lads Brigade?
No Scouts, no Church Lads Brigade, but I was involved with the choir very much at a Church of England, actually. I was a Wesleyan, but I was collared by a customer in the shop, heard me singing in the greenhouse one day, and so asked permission to take me over, and she trained me for a long while. During the week, used to go there after school, which was nearly opposite the county school. Training all went on for anything like solos and voice production. She was one of three sisters. In those days, there were a lot of those about who were independent and all did good works. She did the musical side. Another sister did the men's Bible society meetings, and they had a lot of men then. And the other sister did the flowers and all that sort of thing, all independent.
You say it was a Wesleyan Methodist background.
Yep.
Was it strict?
Yes. I also belonged to the Sons of Temperance, which met every week, and the Band of Hope earlier on, which also met every week. That's Sons of Temperance was a serious business and well conducted by a local councillor and somebody fairly high up in the railway system in those days, yes. And other things, politics, liberal. Being a Methodist, one was naturally, being a Wesleyan, in those days there was no joint, one was naturally liberal. Liberal Party were doing quite well in those days, and they had a lot of liberals in them. So that, I think, kept the life fairly busy, apart from helping in the business in a rush. Oh, I would take bouquets up to Masonic halls and places in London for their big dues. They would happen in the evening, so I would help by taking the bouquet up in a box. That was an evening employment, every now and again, not a lot, but we used to do those sort of... My mother's very good at that sort of thing, getting that stuff looking beautiful.
Now, you were 14 when the war broke out in August. Well, what can you remember about the outbreak of war and how you felt?
Well, my brother and I were madly pleased about it all. We were excited. We rushed about getting newspapers. My father was a very gentle soul, but he did tell us off because he just spent and borrowed. He borrowed about £200, I think, to rebuild the whole of the nursery. And it was wonderful stuff. I mean, everything was wonderful. And to have that happen, and then a war break out, made him try to check us. But we were all terribly keen on the whole thing because the Germans... we didn't like Germans anyhow, and we'd got a very nice German barber who'd come away from Germany, even in those days, at the bottom of the road, and he didn't make us love Germany. I mean, he was so good that we knew why he'd come away from a military place and so on. And at school, well, it was excitement for boys, especially a school like that. I mean, there was no question of any peace things in those days. I mean, so the outbreak of war was great excitement.
Why exactly did you dislike Germans? Was it just this this barber telling you why he'd left, or was it
it was a general, their goods they were exporting to countries were DRGM is what Deutsche Reich so and so, but we called it dirty rotten German make. That's when I was younger, not at the next school. I mean, that was a general feeling that they were exporting a lot of rubbish. A lot of it was very cheap. Well, they are cheap, so that didn't help home trade. And what else would cause? I don't know. Some cartoons in the papers would. They were never very favourable to the Germans. Other than that, we had one or two German. Oh, again, the local baker was a German, Weitzel. And he was a very nice fellow, but he'd come away and got a nice family and so on. Oh yes, quite a number I'm thinking of now, and on holiday you would meet them, so that we always had a holiday every, which a lot of people didn't, but being in business, I mean, well, my father came down weekends, and later on father came 1 week, my mother took the other. We had a fortnight at the sea always, and so we did meet people.
Was there any prejudice against these Germans, even the ones who'd taken exile, so to speak?
Prejudice. Prejudice, yes, because they were claiming to be everything in the world, and they tried a liner, surely. They were trying to get the transatlantic sailing business. They were pushing hard to be the biggest ones at that. And also they were building their navy up, and after all, the British Navy had for many years been it all over the world, and the Germans were building ships rapidly, and we didn't like it.
Did that dislike of Germans generally, did it extend to the ones you met locally?
Nothing like that, no. But when the war started, yes. When the war started, the barber had to shut up. He was taken off. They took off most of the Germans that had come over, and they had to go into camps and places. Mind you, they were well looked after and they were very decent people. But they had to do it. The baker, he survived, Mr. Weitzel. But quite a number had to be taken. Well, some of our roughs, we had some roughs even in those days, they did make a show. I suppose a few windows were broken. They did make a show, but not a lot, because the majority of people were completely the other way.
So if the windows were broken or a show was made, then you and the rest of your community would oppose that?
We'd oppose that very much, yes. Yes.
At school, was there any question of the older boys leaving to join up, or any of that sort of war fever amongst the older?
The most interesting one was we had a German boy there, a sort of guest to the school who had been there several years. He was recalled immediately just before the outbreak of war and had to go back to Germany. It was reported to us by the head for a little while that they'd heard of him. He was, of course, in the army, German army, and we did hear from him a little, but then, of course, that stopped later on. And in the school, now the question was, the rest of the question was,
well, whether anybody actually joined the British Army
Upper years. We had one, I remember particularly, he got a place in Oxford or Cambridge coming up, but he remained at school a little while I was there, wandering about with some papers in his hands. That looked as though he was working. He spent a lot of time. We had a lovely green outside the school playing field. And he joined the artillery. he was later killed. That was very sad. And later on, I was to check up that about him from a friend of mine who had a book given to him by a friend of mine, which was the history of the Royal Artillery. And in it was this Medlicott, it was, second lieutenant so-and-so Medlicott. His father was a bank manager.
So not a lot of
not a lot. Well, they weren't old enough. See, most of them left at, in those days at 16 and a half would be about it. So that there was no runaway. They started a cadet corps in the school straight away. I didn't join, but several in the form did. Again, the scholarship boys helped quite a bit because they supplied the drummers and one or two other things like that. They'd had the necessary. And that cadet corps worked very well. One of the masters took it over and did it.
Why weren't you interested in it? What made you
I
not
was
want
so,
to
do There was no military history in the family. I was, of course, busy with all this other stuff, singing and so on. I often wonder now, because now I'm madly keen the other way. But there was no great prejudice. The parents didn't mind either way. But I can't now. I often do wonder why I didn't join it. But I didn't. They were a good little corps and very smart. And got the people ready for getting commissions later on, quite a number, of course.
In this very early days of the war, did you, what sort of war did you anticipate? Did you think it would be
over by Christmas?
You thought that
yes,
at the time?
Yes, most people thought that, oh, this will be over by Christmas. And there was no great panic because Asquith, who was premier at the time, is now remembered by referring to the city like a lot of women at their teacups or something, I remember. And there was no great panic, but over by Christmas was the idea, and it didn't work out. But that was the feeling, and people were joining up like mad. You couldn't stop them. They just couldn't be stopped joining up straight away.
What did you think of the news that was coming through the war, of the war during
well,
that time?
Well, I went on holiday. My parents, of course, couldn't leave business. I mean, they were worried about the business. So I was taken on holiday by my grandmother and an aunt and an uncle. And we went to Westcliff-on-Sea. And my very keen, clear memory is walking along one of the roads parallel with the sea where there was a newsagent's shop. And in those days, posters were always, placards were always outside the shop with all the news. And I remember one vividly, which was a British retreat from Mons, and so on. That happened several times, the coming back and back and back. That was somewhat, not disappointing, but a bit striking. I can see the placards now outside a shop on that side of the road, on which the retreat from Mons, as it was known, it did disturb a little. We had no question of thinking things wouldn't go right or anything, but it was to see them on the placards, and they were very clear messages in those days. They didn't hedge, so that yes, we did on that holiday. It lasted a fortnight. It was very nice. And but at home, I mean, that was that. Not at home, the news again, the placards, but there was still the war fever, nearly a fever. People were still joining up like mad. And from the church, Acton Hill Methodist, that I attended, or Wesleyan rather, all the young men there joined up, and there were a lot in those days. Young men came up in those days from the country to jobs in London. London was the Mecca, I believe it still is, but it was then. That's the golden place where the streets were gold. And they came up, and they were a very nice class of people, and they joined up, well, straight away. And we had a huge list of casualties later, a roll of honour at Acton, a long one. But the feeling of the war was end at Christmas. That was lost by November or December, I suppose, and that was the end of the year. But recruiting was going on rapidly all the time.
Did you hear of or believe the atrocity stories about the Germans?
We heard of them and we believed every word, I'm afraid. Yes, we believed every word, and we didn't like it. It wasn't a question of fighting honourably, it was a question of being beastly. Beastly would have been the word in those days. Yes, and I still believe they did commit shocking atrocities. Granted, sometimes people did fire at them, like some of our young people would have done from a farmhouse if the enemy were coming along. They'd take a pot shot at them with a shotgun. Well, then, of course, they started slaughtering people in the village and roundabout a bit. Nothing like the Second War, but otherwise they really shouldn't have done it. We didn't like it at all.
How did you feel as a young man, as you went into 1914-15, almost a boy still?
Yeah.
What did you think of things like conscientious objectors? Did you hear about those?
Yes, we didn't like them at all, and I didn't ever know one. But we did hear of them, but we really didn't believe them. I mean, we didn't believe they believed what they said they believed. So we didn't like them. That was pretty universal. Because by now, in the 14-15, every family was involved with somebody in the army. Everybody. I mean, every family pretty well was involved. They'd all got somebody. Cousins. If nobody near, it would be cousins or uncles, aunts. Not aunts yet, but uncles. Yes, they were all involved.
Did your attitude to the war start to change as the war went on? As you moved out of 14 into 15 into 16?
No. The attitude to the war was still that we were doing the right thing. We had one or two air raids a little at the age of, say, I was 17 or so. They visited London once or twice. Once on a Saturday morning. I was near getting 17 and a half then, I suppose. That didn't please us, really. It excited us.
What can you remember about the air raid?
The air raid, why, rushing onto the top of a building. I was then working at Barker's at Kensington. That was a store in those days. I don't know whether you know that, but all the youngsters raced up onto the flat roof of one of the parts of the building. There were a collection of shops. And watched the slight anti-aircraft work. Whether we saw the German planes or not, we saw planes. I can't guarantee that at this stage, but we were excited. Not frightened, of course, but excited. I mean, there we were up on the roof with a very good view, and it was a Saturday morning, because we all worked Saturdays then.
Did you realise what the war was like? I'm thinking of after the Somme in that area. Did you start to lose the glory tinge of the war all?
No, there was no glory tinge lost. The Somme was a shock to everybody, but there was enough advance made to justify, in people's minds then, to justify the action. And it hit so many families, of course it was a serious matter. But we didn't change our view of the war at all. It was going on, and we still were sure we were going to win. Well, that applied Second War, of course. We're still sure we were going to win.
Now, how did your father had been worried about the effects on his business?
Quite.
How did it affect his business?
It didn't really affect his business, except that my brother, who was much involved in the business, joined up, and that put him working early and late. He still produced lots of stuff. We produced loads of tomatoes in those days, masses in greenhouses, up here, down there. And I mean, one of my jobs was watering those. Well, that was lovely. Water is a great thing, even at 15, 16 or 14 or 13. Playing with water is a gift. And it didn't affect the business badly. People still entertained other people and therefore bought flowers and things. It didn't really affect it. We lost the help. Oh, yes. We lost help in the home a bit. We always had somebody working in the house. And one or two of those, we had three, went over a period of three, I think. They went into munition factories and aircraft work.
Was that because of patriotism or because of the increased wages?
Because it was because there was very increased wages, freedom from being in a house where you slept and lived and everything else. No, they went not from patriotism. Those they went because there were good jobs. They were good jobs. They could really do something, and it was a daily job where they went home at night. Yes. They were all good girls, and we liked them very much. But they did leave, and finally we had nobody. So it took two or three years for them to, to go the one, two, three.
Did your father employ anybody in the
greenhouse? He employed about four men. We always had four or five men that went out tending gardens, not so much making gardens as cutting the grass every week. Weeding every week, planting the bedding stuff out, generally regular customers who had sizable gardens, and their wage was 5 pence an hour. We charged 6 pence an hour in the bills, which I made out the bills. 6 pence an hour, and the men got 5 pence.
Did you lose any of them?
We lost some of those men. They gradually disappeared again. One of them went off, of course, into munition work. The others, I just don't know what happened. They were too old to go in the army. More or less too old. They were men of 50, probably the sort we employed. They were strong. They were willing. They pushed barrows around with all their tools. They didn't have vans, but we didn't suffer except that they left. And of course, I suppose the war did affect people. Their gardens weren't so important to them. And I should say at the end of the war we had no one employed. No.
So although you lost people, the business didn't actually
The business
collapse
itself,
or
no.
Particularly.
Because so much was grown on the place and that it really kept it going well. And people still came in regularly. For flowers and things to give presents, and I expect consoling presents when people lost people. We probably had to send flowers to homes, and that people would come in, friend would say, send some plants or flowers. Yes.